Welcome. I'm Angie Querer, filling in for Rose Aguilar. It's your call. And it's KALW's Pride Month. Pride all around the country. Corporate sponsorships have long played a part in the month of LGBTQ celebrations all around the U.S. Parade banners with corporate logos, companies, employees marching and celebrating. It all gave the impression of full-throated support, a chance to cheer together the freedoms promised to us all in America to be wholly accepted as who and what each of us is. It turns out, though, that some of those high-profile high fives were not as sincere as they appeared. Some of those big businesses portraying themselves as allies for equality have scattered off into the dark as the country has taken a terrifying conservative turn. Amazon, McDonald's, and Walmart are just a few of the companies that killed off their diversity, equity, and inclusion programs as soon as Donald Trump threatened their federal contracts. Others, slightly less timid, renamed or reframed their policies into a contorted stealth mode. That wave spread to Pride funding. Citi, Nissan, and Pepsi dropped financial support from New York City Pride. National accounting firm Deloitte decided not to sponsor Prides at all. Here in San Francisco, Comcast and Anheuser-Busch have dropped all their participation. A Gravity Research survey of Fortune 500 and Global 1000 companies found grim numbers. 39% of those companies plan to reduce Pride-related engagement this year. None of them plan to increase engagement. 61% of executives openly cited the Trump administration as their top reason for rethinking Pride strategies. Are these companies that role-played supportive good buddies to cover corporate indifference glad to finally drop the facade? Or have they had the best intentions but have been forced into an untenable no-win position, backing down with silent resentment? Ultimately, that matters less than the cold hard fact that funding that used to be there for Pride is not anymore. Now, it's not all grim. Here's the flip side. Crowdfunding sprang up to make the difference, and some serious soul searching is going on. Maybe Pride is getting back to its grassroots origins. Maybe some distance from corporate America is a good thing. Question mark. So let's take both the local and national pulse. Suzanne Ford is executive director of San Francisco Pride, the first trans woman to serve in that position. Before that, she was a board member, vice president, and treasurer of SF Pride. Suzanne, welcome to your call.
No, thank you for having me.
Ron DeHart is co-president of the United States Association of Prides. He's president and CEO of Greater Palm Springs Pride, chairperson for the City of Palm Springs Human Rights Commission, and the newly sworn-in mayor of Palm Springs. Mr. Mayor, congratulations and welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Suzanne, let's start here in San Francisco. The big weekend, the 28th and 29th, it's 2 weeks out. Is the situation of who's paying for what still in flux? And reports are some big sponsors that pulled out, Nissan, Comcast, Infinity, some others, pulled out, and some of them came back in. So who's in, who's out, and has the dust settled a bit?
The dust has settled. La Crema and Benefit Cosmetics are included this year in the parade and the celebration, and we didn't think they were going to be, so that's a great development. But Anheuser-Busch, Nissan, and Comcast, none of those three will be back. But I can say that we have not cut anything, that the celebration and the parade and Pride Week itself will all happen, and we will make it through the event. The question really is, what financial shape will SF Pride be on the other side?
Yeah, understandably. So the scale and the content of the celebrations, at least for this year, is going to be the same?
Yes, it will be.
Okay. Ron DeHart, before we compare that to the national picture, can you acquaint us with the United States Association of Prides and what it does?
Sure. It's a national organization that is an association for Pride organizers across the country. So we bring folks together and help educate and be a voice on the national level for Pride organizers.
So do you take an advisory role when all of this is happening? Do organizations come to you and say, hey, what are they doing in Philadelphia? How can we apply that here? Do you take that role?
Sure, we've tried to facilitate the conversation within all of our districts, and we that's how we get to learn from one another as Pride organizers and stay on top of this developing issue.
So, how are the numbers shaking out across the country? How many groups are losing sponsors, and how much money are we talking about net?
We don't have a dollars number or a specific number of how many sponsors have dropped. What we do know is these national level sponsors, maybe they pick 15, 20 prides or less across the country in their sponsorship plan, their marketing plan. And that's where we're seeing some of the biggest hits is in national markets. Where we typically have, their A media markets, larger pride organizations reaching very large audiences. We're seeing the largest impact there. And across the country, we estimate there's around 480 pride organizations in the United States. Hundreds and hundreds of those organizations don't even get funding from Anheuser-Busch. Or Nissan, or L'Oreal, or Deloitte. So for them, it is a challenge year still. The economy is not in a good position. The tariff conditions are got businesses questioning what's going to happen to that retail market next year. So budgets are being constricted across the board. So it the whole economic issue is having an impact across the board with Pride organizers. And it's not just an LGBT issue. The festival and event organizers, large-scale event organizers, are feeling that economic hit also across the country.
Suzanne, hearing what's happening on the national scale, I wonder here locally that some of the companies that we named, did they surprise you by stepping back? I mean, maybe you felt these were real deal allies. They were there for the long haul, and then they were gone.
Right, that we had relationships with those companies going back. I mean, Comcast has been a sponsor for over 20 years. So yes, and Anheuser-Busch for the last several years, every year that I've been involved in Pride, they've been there. But I was surprised, and I was mad at myself for being surprised. Given the context of what we're facing out in the world right now, I think we should have been aware that that was a great possibility. Maybe I just didn't want to believe that. But I think also I'd like to add, what's different for as far as large scale prides in the United States, we're one of the last that's totally free. So our model is very, very reliant on those corporate funds because, you can come down to the Civic Center and come in. There's no charge for any of the entertainment, the community stages, or the main stage. So this has been very scary for us because we will not be having ticket sales at the gate to fund Pride.
Well, in fact, you alluded, Suzanne, to the fact that going forward, you might have to look at a whole different model. Are you considering perhaps paid events?
Well, I think the board does have an appetite to at least look at that. Could we have a ticketed concert that raised funds? But then, if you start talking about that, then you have to worry about cash flow going into the event would add a big strain. So I don't think there are any easy answers to it. And I really think having a free pride is really in the DNA of San Francisco. So I hope we don't have to go down that road. I want to find additional funding from different sources.
I know, Suzanne, you can only say so much about what happens behind closed doors, but I'm wondering in those negotiations that you had, both with the companies that are, GONE gone and the ones who decided to stick it out, what have you learned going forward about how to engage with the companies and what there might be in some kind of common thread amongst those that decided to stay? What are you going to take out of that?
That's a great question. I think, and this is going to astound some people, there are some corporations that came to us that are doing the right thing. They are providing funding for nothing. They're not asking for that commercial walking down Market Street or their logo anywhere. They've come forward and said, hey, we know what you are facing, and we are employed. This is important to our corporation as far as values. Here's some money, but we don't want, we'd rather not have the logo placement. And it's hard to unpack that. Thank you, because we need the money to keep it free. So I'm going to take that check. But then what's happened in your corporation? Because like you said, you know, if you go back to 2017 forward or 2016, corporations have just been lining up to make sure that they express those values in a logo way, or, you know, for the deliverables as far as advertisement. So it's really, things are shifting around. And I think how you approach them, I think we are going to go back to, this is the right thing to do if you share our values. Whether or not you want that to be publicized, I'm going to leave that up to those individual corporations.
That is amazing. There are companies that will quietly support Pride and not ask for public accolades. That's heartwarming.
It is in a way, but it's a little disappointing that now they don't want to amplify that they support our values.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, and I think that really points to, this is such a nuanced conversation, and I usually see very simple answers to it. You know, Pride shouldn't be a corporate event. Well, how would you keep it free? Corporations, all they care about is a commercial. Well, some of them don't even want the commercial now. There's so many levels of nuance to this. I think balancing that is always difficult, and that will always be our job at NS of Pride.
That's Suzanne Ford. She's Executive Director of San Francisco Pride, and we're going to turn back now to Rhonda Hart, who is co-president of the United States Association of Prides, president and CEO of Greater Palm Springs Pride. Ron, I'm sure you've had many thoughts as Suzanne has been talking here about the compromises, about the companies that prefer to keep it quiet that they are supporting, about whether they're doing it from the goodness of their hearts or they're a little bit intimidated. Give me your thoughts on all we were just talking about.
I think when we look at, you know, we're, for the most part, Pride organizations are 501c3 or civic nonprofit groups. Donors donate to nonprofit organizations all the time and not ask for their name to be recognized or have a building named after them. So I think even though we may be seeing more businesses make contributions to the organizations, that is showing that they do have that value of support for diversity within the community. And they see that there's a need, and they want to continue to invest where that need is in their community. Now, each organization across the country, I had mentioned we estimate about 480 Pride organizations. Every city is different. Every Pride organization is run differently by a different group of volunteers in most cases. And they each will handle this situation based on what they feel is best for their community.
Well, in fact, since you bring that up, Ron, talk about the different cultures that we see in the celebrations. And I'm imagining that how one might engage in talking to possible sponsors in Arkansas might differ greatly from what Suzanne deals with here in San Francisco.
Sure. We're all at very, very different levels. San Francisco is certainly, you know, the largest Pride celebration in California, and being able to offer that free access is really important to San Francisco. Same here in Palm Springs. Being able to be accessible to everybody in the community is an important commitment that the Palm Springs Pride Organization, like San Francisco, has made to the community. So when we look at other Pride organizations across the country, many of our Pride organizations are free, and they rely on donations from individuals. They rely on community organizational support and business support for the event, to stage the event. Whether it's a celebration, a march, a protest, a rally, they all look different.
Mm-hmm. Ron, I'm going to stay with you for one more moment, because this is not directly Pride related, but we are talking about a picture across the country that has changed in so many ways politically. A few weeks ago, there was a car bomb that exploded outside a fertility clinic in Palm Springs, as you know. The bomber appears to have been motivated not by homophobia, but by opposition to the continuation of any and all human reproduction. At the same time, gay couples commonly use IVF. So, you know, obviously that's intimidating there. Palm Springs is known as a very welcoming town. It was the first in the country to have an entirely LGBTQ city council, which you were later elected to. So how are things feeling there, not just in terms of sponsors leaving Pride, but even in a safe community, how the tenor of things has changed?
Well, I think just the basic environment in the nation, before the bombing occurred, has been unsettling. And it's disappointing. The administration is making a lot of moves that are causing stress and mental anguish for many people, not just in Palm Springs. But the bombing, after the bombing, certainly our community was very concerned. There is still some emotional settling happening within the community. We had an earthquake last week, I think, with pretty good earthquake, and that shook people again in fear that there was another incident. So folks are on edge. But we have an important role to reassure our community that, working with our public safety officers, we work year-round on our safety plans and implementation plans, trying to plan for and address any instance that may come up. And we're reassuring our community, our force is as strong today as it ever has been, and we will continue to be very, very diligent.
Susanna, I want to take the same nature of question to you, the larger picture of what's happening in the country, because the federal government has, at least at times, made mention of Pride, you know, customary mentions, acknowledgments of Pride, and obviously that is not happening this year, quite the opposite. So how does that play out in San Francisco? Does that matter whether the federal government is supportive or not?
Yes, it does, because it's affecting our community in so many different ways. Different nonprofit queer organizations are hurting. There's no way to be in the community and not feel it. So even though we are in San Francisco, we feel protected in some ways, but the federal government has a large reach. And so there's no way for what's happening in D.C. not to affect us in San Francisco.
What about the federal government discouraging immigration and making things uncomfortable, even for people who should have every normal right to come in and out of the country? There are some reports that participation is down and that, you know, just attendance is going to be down because people aren't traveling as freely. Is that an issue, Suzanne?
Well, I think it is an issue as far as internationally. I don't think we'll have as many travelers. I don't think there were many people internationally that came to Washington, D.C. We are concerned for our queer immigrant community. And is this going to dissuade some of them from not being there? Surely it will. But I was on a call earlier this morning with other executive directors, and one of the executive directors of a queer trans Latino organization said, no, we will be there, Suzanne, we have to be there. So we are trying to think about how we can best protect everybody. We want everyone to come out, but I think it is a personal decision for queer immigrants or trans community, whether they think that they want to come out on Sunday. I surely hope that they can, and I'm going to be at the front of that parade, a proud trans woman, and we're not going to let them take this away from us.
What about just the workforce on the ground? There are a lot of people who do a lot of work while Pride is up and running, and I'm wondering how many of those are afraid to show their faces right now.
You know, so far, our volunteer numbers are good. We contract with Silverback Productions. They help us produce the parade, and their workforce seems fine. Obviously, it's not going to be business as usual, but I think that we will have enough people. And I hope that most of the people that are donating their time are people that don't have that worry and that they can donate their time. So our Black and brown siblings can have a special day together.
Ron, I want to take the same question to you. Has the issue of immigration and the issue of ICE raids, is that playing any part in some of the folks that are reporting from you across the country?
Sure. You know, I think that that's an age-old issue and challenge with immigration enforcement, certainly with prides along the border in border cities. This isn't a new challenge today. It's just heightened today. And the other interesting side of this, it's an interesting dynamic. Typically during hot political years, hot political issues, political election years, you're going to see attendance at pride events across the country spike. And we're seeing good, steady attendance so far. And in Palm Springs, we have, in cities across the country, more people than ever have been showing up for rallies. And we expect that more of the community is going to come out because they want to be together in celebration and in a sign of unity for all the community, the LGBTQ plus community, and our allies. So we'll continue to see some strong attendance. Suzanne, I think, hit it on the head. It's correct. The expectation would be that we won't see as much international travel, but that impacts a very, very small percentage of Pride organizations that are of the scale that draw international travelers. Our small town America cities, they host events for their community. And we're seeing the communities come out in full force.
Yeah, I think you bring up something that's important to acknowledge, is that with the scale of things that are set up for different cities and communities across the country, even here in the Bay Area, I think, if it's off the top of my head, I think it's Pacifica that is in its fourth year of having a small Pride celebration on their own streets. And of course, you know, Pacifica is next door to San Francisco. So we have that whole scale right here as sure. Well.
Yeah, well, you really saw that balloon coming out of COVID. Many, many small cities across the country who've never had a Pride event. Coming out of COVID, we saw these Pride events being organized as a way to do what I had just said a minute ago, to bring the community together in a sign of unity and support for one another.
In fact, you talked us into the second half of the show because we're going to be talking about the roots of Pride celebrations and whether the lack of corporate sponsorship, or at least the reduction of corporate sponsorship, might be a cue to go back to the grassroots base, where Pride started, what it was about, and what it will be like going forward. So stick around for that. I'm Angie Cuero, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call. We are talking about corporate sponsorship of Pride events, both locally and nationally. After a break, whether this is that turning point that we've been looking for, and how this plays against some long-time considerations that maybe Pride has become too corporate in some areas as well. We would very much like to bring your thoughts into our conversation. We're opening the phone lines right now at 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. If you'd rather not go on the air, you can email us with your thoughts or questions. Your call at kalw.org. Give this some thought. Have you changed your shopping habits in reaction to the companies that are shifting their support, well, either for LGBTQ causes specifically or DEI policies in large? Maybe you or someone you know works at a company that has changed their policy. So if you're inside corporate America, it would be great to hear from you about what kind of conversations are taking place there. What do you think about the nature of Pride, particularly here in San Francisco? Has it gotten too corporatized? And could this financial backslide be kind of a gift in wolf's clothing? So give us those thoughts, 866-798-8255. Write us at yourcall@kalw.org. We'll all be right back here on Your Call. This is Your Call. I'm Angie Cuero. To the question of how Pride organizations perceive themselves on the spectrum from completely reliant to totally independent, we've been hearing from our guests about how corporate sponsorship is changing the face of Pride celebrations nationwide. Suzanne Ford is with us, Executive Director of San Francisco Pride, and Rhonda Hart, who wears many hats, including co-president of the United States Association of Prides. Let's talk about, if you'll bear with me, a little bit of history here. And there's long been criticism of some Pride celebrations that they're too corporatized. It's lost its radical roots, that Pride commemorates the Stonewall Rebellion, which itself was radical. It was against police harassment. It was against anti-gay laws in New York. So let's probe the idea that being outsiders of sorts was actually empowering, and that becoming mainstream left vulnerable people in the dust, people who weren't as appealing or as open to corporate sponsorship. And most relevant in this situation, that popular acceptance was really only an illusion on the part of corporations all along. Suzanne, let me take that to you first.
Well, I think as a trans woman, I understand being on the outside. I think trans people feel, even in the LGBTQ community, we're not quite there yet, where maybe gays and lesbians are as far as acceptance. But I also, you know, just because we take money from a corporation does not mean we agree with everything they do, and they do not control any of our messaging. And I think San Francisco Pride has always been on the forefront of standing up for marginalized communities. And then at the front of our parade, and that's been since 2017, which was the first year I marched with it, is the resistance contingent. And the resistance contingent is the first walking contingent behind the Dykes on Bikes. And it is there expressly to stand up for marginalized people in this country and to push back against the administration in Washington, D.C. That's why it was founded. So I think that we do honor the roots of Pride and why we're supposed to be there, while also including our siblings that work at these some of these corporations and want to be proud about showing that they're accepted in their workplace. So I think, again, it's balancing a lot of things and trying to honor our history, all the people in our community, and what Pride is supposed to be about.
In fact, we have a caller who goes right to that point. So let's bring in Casey from San Francisco. Casey, welcome. You're on the air with your call.
Hi, good morning. I just want to, this is a wonderful subject to talk about, because one of the things that I've noticed, the corporate versus the grassroots, I've been watching these Pride parades, I would say for the last maybe 17, 18 years. And it was very interesting to see the difference year to year, where maybe 15, 17 years ago, you saw a lot more, you know, of the LGBTQIA plus really out there. And then as the years went on, you started to see where it was just been a boulevard, you know, starting from practically the Ferry Building all the way to Civic Center. It was just a boulevard of ads, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, you would see them, you know, on the trucks, you know, and they would be doing something really cute, you know, but then it was an ad. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we saw maybe two more, you know, individuals from the community, and then another car or two or three cars of ads, you know, where you might have saw either the mayor in a car and somebody else. And there was a moment where we stopped going. Mm. You know, because we know that me and my friends, we just stopped going, you know, because we thought, like, why are we going? Because we remember 15, 17 years ago, you saw more of the community, you know, out there. It was a lot more flashier. It was a lot more engaging, you know. And then we said, we're not going to go anymore, you know, because now we don't see as many people out there really in it. It's just a boulevard of ads.
That's really interesting. Suzanne, let me take that to you, and then we'll go to Ron after that.
I would love to answer that. I'm so sad that you're not going anymore, but in the last 4 years, when I became interim executive director, we instituted this policy. In the first third of the parade, there are only five corporations. Hmm. There are, you know, there are 25 to 30 queer nonprofits in that group, and only five corporations. And we scale back the number of corporations in the parade. They're not as many, and we make sure that they're placed back in the parade. And then the corporations that aren't our sponsors that just come on and buy a contingent in the parade, they are in the back half. And I think that first year in 2022, we instituted a policy where we put a surcharge on those corporations. We raised it to try to help to make sure that nonprofits can be in the parade. And the nonprofits pay a much reduced rate. They don't pay nearly what the corporations do in the parade. So we've heard that from the community, and we've been very sensitive, but I don't think we've done a good job at telling that story. People might see on social media, let's say Apple in the parade, and see a big contingent. And then that gets transposed on for the whole parade, and it's not true anymore. And I'm really proud of that, but I think not enough people know about that.
That's Casey, thank you for bringing that up. That's very, very relevant point. Ron, I take this to you, and as we've been talking about through the course of the hour, not all cities have events at this scale, but for those who do and those who do have corporate sponsors, how do they deal with that impression that this is some kind of corporate takeover for the sake of advertising? What are the logistics between making sure that's not the case?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, those decisions are made independently by every organization. Every organization in every community has asked themselves that question. And how do they deal with that balance? If there is a need to balance. Because in many communities, these small town Americas, we don't have the branding. We have local businesses supporting their community and their community parade. So it is an issue in many cities, and it's an issue in conversation that has been around since nearly the beginning of the Pride marches in New York and San Francisco and Boston and San Diego and Atlanta. You know, as these large scale Pride events gained momentum, the way of hosting events changed, the requirements from cities changed, the cost changed. When you are bringing thousands and thousands of people together, you've got a lot of responsibility to care for those individuals from a security standpoint. You have to have restroom facilities, medical facility, insurance. So the growth of an event like a Pride celebration or march has changed dramatically over the last 50 years. So there is a huge need for the communities to figure out, how do we pay for that? And many are free, like we mentioned before, and some are ticketed. So that's how they generate revenue to pay those costs. But this, the argument or the conversation between corporate displays, during a Pride event, or the rainbow washing that goes on, this has been going on for a long time. But that business funding is very important, not just for the flashy decorations and entertainment, but for security, insurance, port-a-johns, and so on. But what it does is creates an opportunity for discussion within every community. Both perspectives have validity. You know, having business sponsorships and not having business sponsorships. Mm-hmm. So they both are valid discussions, and every community will handle them in their unique way.
Let me ask you, Ron, if you're free to say so, I'm very curious to know if you are aware of any incidents around the country where a corporate sponsor has attempted to exert control over content of a parade or how an event is conducted. You know, are these things that, well, these are beyond the pale. If you do XYZ, or because you did XYZ last year, we're out of here.
Interesting. You know where that has happened?
Hmm.
Not with the a business supporter. That has happened with nonprofit organizations or our social service organizations that don't like the view that the Pride organization may have taken, or don't agree with a political education stance that the organization has taken. So they question the movement. They question what the Pride organization is doing. I've never seen that type of questioning come from
Oh, we just lost Ron. We're going to bring him back on in just a second. Suzanne, let me take the same question over to you. And sure. I'm glad that Ron brought up the issue of nonprofits. Have you been privy to any of those discussions about any effort to exert control over content or conduct?
Oh, yes. I think I had the job for a week when the mayor, Mayor Breed, pulled out of the parade because of our stance on the uniformed officers from the Queer Pride Alliance for police officers. We found a compromise. We limited the amount of officers wearing a full uniform, and they, you know, most of them wore matching T-shirts that did denote that they were SFPD, but that's just the first. I mean, every year you have pressure from different groups about something that we do. I have had a sponsor before ask me that if we could share our public comments before we release them, and I was like, absolutely not. So there is a lot of pressure, especially in San Francisco. You can imagine, you know, here in San Francisco, everything's politicized. And there are always groups that, but I will agree with Ron. For the most part, it's nonprofits of certain groups that represent a certain group of people in our community, or it's government putting pressure on you because, you know, there's just always a lot of pressure. And I'm really proud at San Francisco Pride, we've stood up for the right thing in very difficult situations. But that's part of who San Francisco Pride is, and that will always be happening.
I want to point people to sfpride.org. Among many, many delights there is just the graphics for this year. Queer Joy is Resistance, with just brilliant colors, the font, everything is just fantastic. And you'll note down toward the bottom, by the way, Suzanne mentioned the Trans March. It's the 21st annual Trans March this year, and it's Friday, June 27th. San Francisco's largest transgender pride event, one of the largest trans events in the whole world. You can learn about that. You can learn about the Dyke March. You can learn about it all at sfpride.org. Ron, I want to make sure that we have you back, and I want to take to you the question that we had before we went to the phones. And that question was about the very nature of pride celebrations and the fact that they grew out of rebellion, and that corporate sponsorship to some extent might tamp that down. Have you heard those conversations going on amongst the communities over the course of the years?
Yes. Am I live now?
Yes, you are. Thank you for coming back.
Yes. So that question and challenge has been existing since Pride events started, and throughout the 70s, we started to see this. It wasn't called rainbow washing, but we saw both sides of this conversation, that too much business exposure we're being taken over. But those are good conversations for every community to have and discuss and figure out which is right for each community. In Palm Springs, I can share, you know, we have 250 parade contingents. We will have fewer than 28% business supporters in that parade contingent. Mm. So an overwhelming number of participants in pride parades are just like San Francisco and Palm Springs, where we have social service organizations, our community clubs, other nonprofit organizations are coming out, individuals are coming out, and they're making a statement. Whatever that statement is for themselves and their organization, they're coming out and making that statement. So I think when it comes back to the corporate display and the false sense of allyship that they're presenting, does that exist? I think certainly yes is the answer. Are there certainly sincere business brands that are truly supporting the organization for the good of what Pride means? Most definitely.
We're going to go back to Suzanne here. Suzanne Ford is executive director of San Francisco Pride. She came up from being board member, vice president, treasurer of Pride. We just heard from Rhonda Hart, chairperson for the City of Palm Springs Human Rights Commission, president and CEO of Greater Palm Springs Pride. Suzanne, you mentioned the participation of police. Bruce in San Francisco wants to talk about that. Bruce, you've got Suzanne's ear. Go ahead.
Hi, Suzanne. This is your ex-board ex-co-board member, Bruce Baudette.
I just wanted to
talk a little bit about that. And, you know, there we have LGBT police officers in San Francisco, many of which are just wonderful, you know, members of our community. At the same time, of course, we've had anti-police violence toward the LGBT community. And so it's tricky sometimes to balance how, you know, we represent things, because I mean, police can be triggering. When Black Lives Matter was a community grand marshal, they dropped out because of the supposed increase in police numbers to protect us after the Pulse incident in Orlando, Florida. You know, it's tricky to balance, you know, being respectful of the of members of our community who are police officers, but at the same time, police officers triggering other members in our community.
That is truly a mess, Suzanne. How do you parse your way through that?
Well, and I had to start parsing my way through that with, I think, the second week I was on this job. Well, first of all, I feel a great responsibility when I'm sitting in front of the police or discussing matters with the police or discussing our community with the police. We always have to say that there's more work to be done. Like today, if I get in my car and drive down the street and get pulled over as a white trans woman, I probably will be okay as long as I follow the law and am courteous. We can't say that for Black and brown trans people. And until we can say that, then SF Pride has to bring up that issue when we're talking to powerful people in the police department. At the same time, we do have queer police officers in San Francisco, and I'm proud of that fact. And we do have a relationship with them. And sometimes it can be at odds because they are very proud to be members of the police department. But we still, like we said, we still have to make sure that we are placing with them, because they have powers in the police department to make sure that our Black and brown siblings are being treated well. I will say, out of all of that, there's been compromises on both sides. There's been try to understanding where the other side is coming from. I have a relationship with Catherine Winters, who is the leader of the Pride Alliance, the queer police officers. And, you know, we've had a difficult relationship, but in that relationship, we've been able to help trans people when they were in trouble or they were going to be in the system. We were able to alert when we were looking for missing trans people. I've been able to pick up the phone and call her. So all that to say that there's a lesson in there. We have to have a relationship with the police department. We have to stand up for the right thing, but hopefully those relationships help our community and help to take care of some of those wounds from the past and help people right now. But it's very tricky, and we'll never get it 100% right, but as long as we're standing up for marginalized people in our community, we're doing the right thing.
Bruce, thank you for an excellent phone call. Thanks very much for that. Ron, do you see pressure on some of the organizations across the country to go entirely back to grassroots? We don't want to be affiliated with corporations. We don't want to be, you know, we don't want to see AT&T marching down the street. We want to be all about the queer people, all about where we came from and where we want to be. Is there a sense of absolutism in some of the people who are contributing to the conversation?
It certainly is a conversation that happens in communities across the country. It doesn't impact a lot of Pride organizations. It does impact some Pride organizations, and they have to debate and decide how they're going to deal with that in their community. And I haven't heard of one that can come to mind that has gone and said, we are not taking any business support whatsoever in our pride. I suspect there's probably an organization or two out there that has made that stance. I just can't, share that with you today.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. I know you heard me say, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think each community makes that decision. And just like policing, just as Suzanne was talking, every community has the same conversation with over police and policing in their community. And in our case in Palm Springs, this is my sixth police chief. And 16 years ago, we didn't have this city didn't have the best relationship with our police department. And I got a lot of slack sitting at the table and having the conversation and being very open and honest, and laying everything on the table with the police chief at the time. But if we don't come to the table and talk through the challenges that we have in our community, and what it doesn't matter who it is in our community. It could be our trans community. It could be any of our marginalized citizens or Main Street. Having the conversation on how policing impacts our community is so important. And though that conversation 16 years ago has now thrived, and we've got an incredibly supportive community. We talk a lot with the police company, police department, and we've got a police department that and a police chief that is very supportive and very out in support of the LGBTQ community.
I want to flip the conversation on its head a little bit, Suzanne, and let's talk about dropping sponsors proactively and exercising an element of choice here. Twin Cities Pride decided to walk away after Target dropped their DEI initiatives, and Target had supported Twin Cities Pride for years. And Twin Cities said, you know what? You dropped your DEI, you're out of here. And I'm wondering about what you see might take place in the future where, just as we see corporations exerting their options and exercising their choices about whether to sponsor Pride, about whether Pride might take its own choice in consideration and say, you know what, we don't want to be associated with you either.
Oh, it definitely can happen. I mean, in our bylaws, we will not take money from oil companies or defense contractors. And so any defense contractor came to us and wanted to sponsor, we would automatically say no. And so that's always a conversation going on with our board. Like I said, I think I don't want SF Pride to get into the a position where we are trying to. We just don't have the capacity to evaluate. Let's put any of the huge corporations in there. We're not going to be able to evaluate everything they do. But when the community, when something happens within one of these corporations and the community comes to us, it's always a very difficult conversation, and they can put pressure on us. And I'll give you an example. Back when Facebook used to have a policy that for trans people that you had to use your legal name. So I would have had to use my dead name before I legally got my name changed. And so Facebook was not going to be allowed to be in the parade, and they changed that policy. And then Mark Zuckerberg called the executive director at the time and begged to be in the parade, which I find is
Wow.
very funny. Yeah, look at it now, right? Which I think is really says a lot about who he is and how that corporation's being run. But yeah, so it definitely and I've had some difficult conversations with some of the sponsors that we've kept. We've put pressure on them and asked them about certain policies. And so I think, I do like that we have a seat at the table. Some cases I wouldn't want to lose the relationship, but I totally respect what Minneapolis did about Twin Cities Pride. But then on our case, we are allowing the Target ERG, their employee resource group, their queer their queer employees to march in the parade. I don't want to penalize the queer employees of a corporation because of what the corporation is doing. So it's all a balancing act. Again, I would rather take the money from these corporations and give it to our community than charge our community. But, you know, it's a difficult balancing situation.
And that means I'm going to take to you, Rhonda Hart, the last word, whether you see this kind of attitude about Pride exerting its own influence about who is allowed to be on the streets with them.
Sure. I think Twin Cities set an example this year, but they set that example because they were representing the voice of their community, and they were able to raise the call and secure funding through crowdsourcing to replace that target money multiple times. I think even this year we saw other cities do the same thing as a way of trying to raise money, not necessarily saying we're going to refuse a contribution from a business or a brand. But I think certainly seeing the leadership from Twin Cities this year, I think will give strength to other Pride organizations that may be sitting on the fence and saying or discussing this very issue around their board table. So I think that we will all have a lot to learn from the outcome of Twin Cities. And, you know, up to this point, it certainly worked for Twin Cities, and the support of the community was there for that organization.
It's been such a great conversation. I want to thank you both. That's Rhonda Hart, co-president of the United States Association of Prides. You can find that group at usaprides.org. And I also want to thank the executive director of San Francisco Pride, Suzanne Ford. I'm claiming you as our own. Thank you so much for being here.
I appreciate that.
And that's at sfpride.org, where the theme this year is, it just went out of my
queer
head. Here we go. Queer
resistance.
Joy is resistance. There you go. San Francisco Pride at sfpride.org. It's been a wonderful hour. Thanks, too, to the contributions of our callers and all of our listeners. If you've missed any part of today's show or you want to check out Your Call's previous shows, visit kalw.org/yourcall. You can email us with your questions, comments, and show suggestions. That email address is yourcall@kalw.org. As always, this show is a group effort. Thanks to Andrew Stelzer for producing this hour and to stalwart Kevin Vance, studio engineer. And for Rose Aguilar, I'm Angie Cuero. Thank you for tuning in to Your Call.